class today. Glad to see you here. Before we begin, does anybody have any comments, questions, concerns, or other things for me? Yes. Can I turn my mic up? Is this better?
Yes.
Hooray! Other questions? Okay, so today's topic is reviewing for the final. Before we do that, just a brief comment. Hopefully most of you saw this already, but there is an opportunity to evaluate your partners, say nice or mean things about them without them knowing, right? If you go to Collabs on the announcements, there's a link to a form. You can fill it out once for each partner you had. You don't have to fill it out if you don't want to. If I do not see a partner evaluation for you, I will assume that your pairing experience was average. You basically work together all right. Unless, of course, your partner says something different, in which case I'll be inclined to believe them. So anyway, you're welcome to do that. So the final will be given a week from tomorrow for most of you. A reasonably large number of you have various other times you are taking it. Most of you should be aware of that. I think there are 8 of you that I still have sent emails saying, tell me when you're available, and you have not, and I haven't sent the response back. Anyway, but most of you should know where you are. The location of the final is so complicated. We were unable to get 1, 2, or even 3 rooms to fit all the students that need to take the test at the same time. So we have 5. Hooray! So you look up your ID digit on this little chart on the bottom of the schedule, and that's the room you should go to. If you go to a different room, there will not be a final there for you. So you want to go to this room. And no, I can't move you from room to room just because you really like Thornton 303 better than Rice 130 or whatever. Sorry, can't do it. Don't have enough space. They didn't give me enough room for that kind of thing to happen. Exam. I have not yet written the entire exam. I'm going to target an exam that I think will take 1.5 hours. And I will give you 3.5 hours to take it in. Okay? So, traditionally we have 1% of the students stay to the bitter end. Expect to be done before it's over. Most of you will be. Time should not be the constraint that keeps you from performing well if you don't perform well. And hopefully you will perform well. And my plan today is just sort of walk through the various topics. If at any point you have a question or want me to explain something more, do so. If I get to the end and you don't have any questions at all, then we may just end early, or I can talk about something else if you prefer. Of course, if you have questions, I will field them as often as I can. Our hope is to have some TAs offer various test reviews between now and the test in the next 8 days. I have not yet put together the schedule for that, but hopefully there'll be a variety of opportunities for you to visit with people and do some additional review if you so wish. So, what's on the test? It is a cumulative test. What does that mean? Anything I said was fair game for test 1 is still fair game. Anything I said was fair game for test 2 is still fair game. Even if those topics did not actually appear on test 1 or test 2. If I said it was fair game then, it's still fair game. However, more than half of the points will be from the more recent stuff. So we will have cumulative material, but more than half will be from the new material. How much more than half? I don't know yet. I haven't written the exam. What should you know? You will have to write code. You will have to solve problems on a fairly low level, as on previous tests. You should be able to read code and interpret what it is doing, as on previous tests. You will be asked to implement an entire class. And that should not say and, it should say an. Okay, so normally we put that on test 2. We did not put it on test 2 because of snow days and so on, so it will be on the final. We will give you an entire class we expect you to write. We may give you bits and pieces to sort of tie it together and make it easier for us to read your code. Be prepared for that idea. Things you will not have to do. We still don't care if you know what imports belong to what, and we still don't care if you know when you need to use throws, just as we haven't cared in the past. We don't care if you know particulars of examples we've given. So we don't care if you know particular room counting algorithms or how to make particular fractals or details of other in-class or lab exercises, right? The concepts these teach, the ability to do them is important. The particulars that we did as examples or assignments is not. Also, we mentioned briefly L systems when we were talking about fractals. Those will not be tested in any way. So that's what's not there. So what do you need to know? Classes. We had some classes on test 2. There will be more classes on test 3. So we'll expect you to know more about public and private, about static versus non-static, and what those mean for both methods and fields, when to use which one. Expect you to know how to implement an entire class, as we mentioned earlier, how to use classes you write as parameters, return types, and field types. Use classes that refer to other classes. How to write the toString method, not how to write the equals method. Not equals in part because the way the book teaches you to do it is not the right way to do it, and so we just didn't teach you it in class. So that's not part of the test, but toString is. Classes. Yes? How to implement an entire class. Great. So this could be something like I give you a UML diagram and you create the whole code. Or I might not even give you a UML diagram. I might just give you a general description. Okay. So do you want me to say more about that than that? Or is that enough?
That works for me.
Okay. Other questions? Yes. The toString method is in the book. The toString method, yes. Also, I've written 5 or 6 toStrings. All toString needs to do is return a string. Okay? It needs to be public string toString and return a string. Yes? Static versus non-static for fields. Certainly. I told you that static was a bad way of spelling what word? Shared. Okay? A static field is a field that is shared by all objects of this type. Okay? So when we were looking on Friday at the theater, we had a list of theaters. That was static because it was shared by all the theaters. Whereas the name of a theater was not static because it was not shared by all the theaters, it was particular to a particular theater. Do you wish me to say more about that? All right. Other questions about the classes? Okay, algorithms. Should be able to discuss at least a handful of different ways some piece of code could be good or better than others. Such as, it could be simple, it could be versatile, work for more inputs, right? It could be quick to write, it could be fast to run, fill in your easy to read, easy to explain to 3-year-olds, whatever you think is a good criteria. There's more than one of them, right? And just about any piece of code I show you, you can find some way it's good and some way it's bad, although some of them are just purely bad. So at least the concept that there's different ways, you should know that. In particular, as we talked about that, we talked about searching, okay? So we talked about linear and binary search. We also talked about BOGO search. BOGO search is not interesting enough for me to think it's worth reviewing. But you should understand how both linear and binary search work. Right? I should be able to give you a list and you could tell me the sequence of steps that those algorithms would take. So the conceptual level there. You should also know how to code linear search, either for a particular value or for some criteria like the biggest or the smallest or the closest to 7 or the largest number of prime factors or something silly, as long as I give you the appropriate methods to figure them out. So you should know how to write linear search. Binary search, if I wanted you to write it, I would describe what you need to do in the problem. Okay, so you shouldn't necessarily come in knowing how to write binary search, but you should know how binary search works. You should be able to code linear search on your own. Questions about that? Yes?
Binary search is the one where you divide it.
Binary is the one where you divide it in half and throw half of it away, or look at a smaller half next time. Yep. Yes?
Do we have to know how to code putting a list in order?
Do we know how to put a list in order? No. Okay? So we showed you briefly selection sort, and if I wanted to ask you questions about that, I would remind you how it worked first. Okay? So CS2110 will spend a fair amount of time on sorting, as will several following courses, but we just barely touched on it in this course. Yes?
I know a lot of the new material wasn't in the book, but what is in the book?
What is in the book? So the algorithms bullet is the one that isn't. The class bullet and the recursion bullet both are. Chapters 8 and 15. And I point out some practice problems you can go look at for them as well. And partly because it wasn't in the book is why a lot of what we talked about in algorithms I have not listed as being important. the basic things we saw several times, including like linear search, you actually coded long before we talked about it. Back when you were searching for, I don't even remember what you were searching for. And the thing it was homework for, we had something like that. Anyway. Other questions about the algorithms section? And then recursion. So, we should be able to show you recursive code and you should tell us what it does. We showed you a couple of tricks you can use to do that, right? We showed you the rewriting, you cross it out and write out what it means. Showed you creating a table, you can welcome to use either one of those. We're not going to ask for particular approaches, we're just going to ask you to tell us what it does. We might also ask you to write a recursive method, given a description of what it does. Similar to what we had in lab a couple of weeks ago, right? Where we gave you a few descriptions and said, solve this recursively. That kind of the question could show up on an exam. You should know what the three parts of recursion are, how to identify recursive methods that are lacking each part, right? So if I show a recursive method that has two of the three but not the third, you should be able to tell me which one is missing. And you should also be able to tell me what the three are. And you should know the basics of recursive turtle drawings, hey? So we won't try to get really nasty here like we could, but you should be able to basically walk through, given some code, what does it do, which is, i.e., pretend you're a turtle, right? And also given a rule, what does the code look like? We saw several examples of this before. It's a fairly direct representation there. But you should be able to do that kind of thing as well. Questions about recursion? Yes. Will you be writing code for a drawing? That's what that last piece here means, right? Given a rule, what does the code look like? Okay. So we may ask you a question of that nature. Yes. How complicated would I be expected to do? How do I describe that? At one level, it's not complicated because you just do what the code says, right? So you just, every time it says turtle turn or turtle move, you move or turn your turtle on your paper. On the other hand, if I want you to draw a picture, I want to be able to glance at your picture and see if you got it right. So I won't go very many levels down, right? Because I want to be able to see. So I might, for example, ask you one or maybe two depths of the Kolk snowflake, right? But I wouldn't ask you three because that's just tedious. And I probably wouldn't even ask you two depths of something that has four steps along the way, because that's still 16 individual lines you'd have to draw, which is annoying. Other questions about the recursion part? Yes? Yes. So I mentioned that you do not need to know particular fractals, right? So if I wanted you to draw what some recursive code does, I would give you the code I want you to draw. Yes. Okay. That's the topics. That's it. That's what the test covers. So I have some hints, right? We've got the same practice with coding without Eclipse hint we always have, because this remains important. And then here I have a list of some programming problems I think would be reasonable to try from chapter 8 and 15 of the book. Okay? So I'd encourage you to take a look and see if you understand how to do those sorts of things in, say, 20 minutes or something on a piece of paper. CodingBat.com has a lot of example recursive codes. It's got two whole sections of recursive problems you can work on. So I encourage you to look at that. Make sure you really do understand how to write recursive code. We will, of course, show you programs and ask you what they do, so that can be helpful practice. Glance at code, try to figure out what it does. There's lots of ways of doing that. We've seen the table. We've seen the cross it out and rewrite it. We've seen the memory diagrams. Lots of ways of working your way through that. Some portions of what we've done, particularly the algorithm section, is not in the textbook. We've tried to minimize how much of that you need to know, but you can find it in the lecture notes and in the podcasts. There's two different lectures of podcasts. Sometimes I explain things differently between the two. So you're welcome to look at that. Also, I've gotten a lot of people saying, I tried that in previous exams and it wasn't enough. So one more hint that might help you. Study groups are often a good idea. You get a few people together and you write code together on the board. This can help you talk through your thinking. It builds a little bit of the pressure of somebody's watching what you're doing. So it gets you a little bit used to that coding under a little bit of pressure. And you can also learn from other people's ideas that way. Anybody have any questions for me? Yes?
Can you walk through a fractal example?
Surely. Other things people would like me to do. Actually, let's do this. Turn to your neighbor. Come up with one topic you would like me to discuss to help you feel more confident for the exam. We'll take a minute and then I'll ask for your questions. All right, what questions do I have? Anyone? Things we should talk about? Yes? How to use static methods? Yes?
Are the rooms for taking the exam, do they still apply to people who are taking the exam the next morning?
Ah.
Can you go through the linear search and binary search?
Can you go through the third part of lab 13 on the bucket?
Okay. Let's see. Let's start with the easiest of these first. No. If you're not taking the exam at the normal time, you will have already received email to that effect. And I told you I would tell you where the rooms will be later. I still haven't heard confirmation back from the scheduler about that room, so you will still hear back what that is later. But it will not be based on the number of your ID. What order should I do these in? Let's see. Let's start with how to use static methods. Okay, so a static method is, again, a shared method. Meaning what? Meaning the method does not depend on a particular object. Okay? So what are some examples of static methods? We got things like math.pow and math.squareroot. And I don't remember what we called it in homework 6 dot read, homework 5 rather, right? Dot read CSV, and so on. Whatever dot main. Okay? These are static. Meaning what? Meaning I don't need a particular math, or a particular homework 5 object, or a particular whatever object to run these methods. They exist sort of as a concept that belongs to the whole class. Okay, so it's not information we're sharing, it's an action that we're sharing. It does not depend on a particular object. Okay? Non-static, also called instance methods, on the other hand, do need a particular object to talk to. Okay? So I might, for example, have keyboard.nextint. Okay, or bird.flap, or so on, okay? And this is interesting because it doesn't make sense to talk to whole the concept of scanners, give me the next int. But it does make sense to talk to a particular scanner that's reading from one particular input source and ask for its next int. And which scanner I'm talking to, which thing goes in front of the period, changes the answer I will get. Similarly, if I made a flap method in my bird class, most of you didn't, but if I did, then it wouldn't matter which bird I told to flap. Right? If one bird flaps, it shows up differently. Different things happen than if a different bird flaps. So they're non-static. So how do you use static methods? You use static methods to embody the idea of an action independent of any particular object. Okay? Whatever information that method needs to know about, it gets purely from the class it belongs to, which is just really part of its name, and the parameters it's given. Whereas a non-static method doesn't. So how do you use it? Depending on what we mean by use, we do class name dot method name. Parameters, or arguments rather. Okay? That invokes the method and causes it to do its work. Does anybody want me to say any more about that? All right. Well, let's grab this dot next because that's related. When do you use this dot? All right, let me start with the rule and then we'll talk briefly about the exception. So, it is a rule only in quotes, but the rule is this dot before an instance field or method of this object. So what do I mean by that? If I'm talking about a non-static field or a non-static method, okay, an instance field, an instance method, something that does not belong to the whole class, then I should, for some variant of should, always specify which object I'm talking about, which scanner is next int, which birds flap, which object's toString, and so on, okay? And if it isn't some named parameter, if it isn't some named local variable, so if it's not bird.flap, then it's probably going to be this.flap, the current object. The object that is running the current method is also the object that I want to have do the action. Okay? An actual rule is only in non-static methods. Does this even exist? If you're inside a static method, because that method does not refer to any particular object, there is no this object. So if I'm in a non-static method, there is a this object. If I'm in a static method, there is not a this object. Okay? Now, usually, if you leave out this dot, Java will figure out what you mean. Usually. Almost always, in fact. The number of times it fails to do that is pretty small. It'll guess that you forgot the this dot and implicitly put it in there for you. But sometimes it doesn't. So it's polite, it's correct to put this dot in front of any reference to an instance field or instance method. Amy, want me to say any more about this dot? Yes?
What about when you're using it like in a movie and where you
shouldn't fix? Ah, yes. So this refers to an object, and so it can be used like any object, okay? So if I were to look... I think that my movie theater is accidentally moved instead of copying down. But if we were to look here at, for example, theater, you'll see the parameter was this. Meaning what? Meaning I'm giving the showing, in this case, the entirety of this theater. Or this, yeah, this theater. Okay? This theater is a theater just like M is a movie. Right? There's two variables that exist inside the addMovie method. There is M, a movie, and this, a theater. And how is there this, a theater? Because it does not say static and is inside the theater class. Therefore, this exists and is of type theater. Does that help? Well, not really. Yes? No? Oh, sorry. Wrong. Yes. Okay. Other questions about this dot? Or this in general? All right. Since we're on the classes move, let's continue with classes. What should we avoid in writing classes that use classes? Infinite recursion is certainly something you should avoid. as is data inconsistency. Okay? And apparently I did not spell inconsistency correct. Oh, and there's no spell checker. Isn't that nice? Inconsistency. There. Nope. Yes, there. All right. Infinite recursion. Why does this occur? Right? My movie theater example, it happened because I said that when a movie is added to a theater, not to tell the theater it's added to the movie, when it's shot to tell the movie it's added to the theater, shot to tell the theater it's added to the movie, and we never stopped. Okay? So if you have a method in one class, it's more calling a method in another class. Make sure that talking back and forth stops sometime. So that's something to avoid. The other thing you should avoid is data inconsistency. If you have some piece of information, either only store it in one place, or make certain that all of the various places you are storing it agree with each other. So that was the first problem we had with movie and theater. Initially, we made a version where it was inconsistent. The movie could think it was showing at the theater, but the theater could not think it was showing the movie, or vice versa. Okay? So by storing it only in one place, and or by making sure that the two places that have it, or many places that have it, all agree with each other, we can avoid that data inconsistency. For the most part, though, classes that use classes doesn't have a lot. Most of the time, or many times, you don't need to worry about either of these, because sort of one class is clearly in charge, right? You have your car class and your tire class. Usually the tire class doesn't care about the tar class. It's sort of owned by the car. And so we don't have to worry about this. But if they're sort of on equal footing, where there's room for the same information to be stored in two places, this may become important. Anybody wish me to say anything more about that? All right. Okay, I don't actually care which of these next three we do first. Who wants me to walk through fractal example next? Buckets next. Searches next. Just let me go home. I don't want to be here. Okay. If you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here, right? I'm not grading anything. All right, so I think the search one a little bit. All right. Let me walk through the algorithms. Here's my list, okay? I've got a list. And how do the different search algorithms work? Linear search starts with the first thing in the list and looks at everything in order until it finds what it's looking for, okay? So linear, let me actually also put some indices here. Okay, so linear search is going to check lists of 0, then lists of 1, and lists of 2, until it finds it. Okay, simple for loop, most common way of doing it. You can do it with a while loop too, because the two do the same thing, right? You just loop through every index and you check the value there and you see if it's the thing you were looking for. All linear search does. Because of this simple model of looking at everything, there's lots of things you can do with linear search. If I want to know, is 432 in the list, I can just do linear search until I get a 432 or don't. Okay, and I will find it at index 7. But I can also do something like, what's the biggest thing? And I could check a number, and if it's bigger than the biggest I found so far, change what the biggest I found so far is. Right? Because I'm looking at everything, I can use sort of slightly more complicated criterion to do that. For binary, on the other hand, binary is going to check in the middle of the list first. So halfway between 0 and 13. So it's going to check the range 0 and 13. So the middle of that is going to be half of 0 plus 13, which is 6. Okay. So we're going to check lists of 6 first, which is 168. Okay. And then having checked that spot, it's going to use a smaller chunk of the list next. Depending on whether what it's looking for is bigger or smaller than where it looked. So if we were looking, for example, for 432, the next thing it would do would be to check from 7 to 13. Right, where it starts after the last thing it looked at, because it's looking for something bigger. Now on this particular list, binary search won't work because the list is not sorted. But here's what the algorithm does, right? It looks at one side of where it was. It looks in the middle of that, so 7 plus 13 is 20 divided by 2 is 10. So it looks at list sub 10 and gets 476. Okay? And then it's going to look smaller. So now it's going to look between 7 and 9. And the midpoint between 7 and 9 is list sub 8, which is equal to 68. That's too small. So it's going to then check between 9 and 9, which is going to be list sub 9, which is equal to 4132, which is too big. So then it's going to try to check for something that doesn't make any sense. Right? It's going to try checking from 9 to 8, which is an empty interval. It's going to not find it. Right, so what does it do? It keeps chopping the domain, looking in the middle, and using that to throw away most of the list it needs to check, based on how it compares to the number it's looking for. Binary search only works if, well, it only is guaranteed to work if your list is in sorted order. If your list is not in sorted order, binary search usually will fail. It might work occasionally by luck, but usually it will fail. Okay? So this is the concept between the two searches. There's lots more I could say about these. We devoted more than a whole class on these. But those are the concepts. Anybody have any particular questions or things they'd like me to show beyond this general concept of how these work? Yes?
How would you define the interval that you're supposed to check, like in the actual coding?
So binary search, how do you code it? First off, not part of what we're asking you to know for the final, but nonetheless, you'll notice that every point along the way I need sort of four pieces of information. I need to know what list, what I'm looking for, and the beginning and end of my interval. Right? So if I were to make my binary search method, I would make it something like, let's make it static here, okay? So I make a binary search method, and I would need to give it my list, and I need to give it my goal, and my start, and my end. Okay? All four being passed in into my method. Or, alternatively, I can make some of those local variables. Right? So I might make start and end be local variables. But nonetheless, I'm going to have to store all four of those things, because those are the four things I need to keep track of as I'm moving along my method. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Other questions about binary search or linear search? So again, I said that you will need to know how to code linear search. And you may not be just looking for a particular value, you may be looking for some biggest or smallest or something like that. Binary search, you just need to understand how it works. Okay? So this idea that we do narrowing intervals and either find it or not, and what intervals we check when, that's important. Exactly what the code looks like, not something we expect you to know coming into the test. Okay, linear and binary search. Fractals, buckets, fractals one. Okay, so what kind of fractal example do you want me to walk through? I could do rule to code. I could do code to picture. Code to picture. Okay, we're going to do code to picture, and we may come back to rule to code later. All right, so let me just write some code. I'll write it right here. We'll do a public static void fractal, which is going to take a turtle t and an int n. And I'm going to say here, if n equals 0, else. Okay, and if it's equal to 0, t dot forward t 10. Else, I'm going to say fractal t n minus 1, t dot left 90, fractal t n minus 1. Okay, here's some code. Sorry?
You wrote
fractin. No, I wrote fractin. It won't compile. Good thing I didn't write this in code, right? All right, so here's some code. This is simple and will not be particularly interesting looking, but it does give us an opportunity to figure out what it's doing. To draw some picture. So, let's just figure out what this draws for various values of n. Okay? If n is equal to 0 when this is called, what does it draw? A line of length 10. But when you're drawing, who knows how long the length is, right? How about if n is equal to 1? N is equal to 1. We're going to do an n equals 0 drawing. We know what those look like. Then we're going to turn 90 degrees to the left, and we're going to do another n equals 0 drawing. I can certainly talk about that in much more detail if you wish. N equals 1 made sense to me. No, please talk more about n equals 1. Okay, sounds like most of you understood that, right? Just, it calls itself twice and turns once in between. Okay, how about n equals 2? Well, n equals 2 is going to do an n equals 1 drawing, turn left, and then do another n equals 1 drawing. So n equals 1 does this. It then turns left, and then n equals 1 does that. And we've got ourselves a square. Okay. This is not a very interesting fractal. In fact, it's not even fractal, although it is recursive. Okay. Questions about n equals 2. N equals 2 makes sense to me. I don't get n equals 2. Okay, let's just try real quick n equals 3. And we'll come back and talk about sort of the second way we could have done these drawings. Yeah, we may not even bother with that for this one. We may give a more interesting code first. So n equals 3 is going to do an n equals 2. Then it's going to turn left and do an n equals 2. Okay, and this code turns out to just draw squares. That's all it does. Okay, it's not very interesting. It's not very fractalish. It just keeps drawing the same square over and over again. Let's make it more interesting. Da-da-da-da. I'm going to add a right and then another fractal call. Okay. So if I had three recursive calls, still n equals 0 is just a line. I didn't change what happens in n equals 0. It's still just a line. N equals 1 now is slightly more complicated, just barely. We do a 0, we turn left, we do a 0, we turn right, we do a 0. And we get this little, I don't know, what do you want to call that? Stair-steppy thing? Left side of a top hat? Who knows? Okay, so we got our left side of our top hat, and then for n equals 2, we're going to do a whole n equals 1. We're going to turn left. We're going to do a whole n equals 1. We're going to turn right. We're going to do a whole n equals 1. Okay? So I've got an n equals 1 here. I've got one here. I've got one here. And I turned in between. questions about that? So then if I were to continue, I would need an entire one of those. An entire n equals 2. Then I would turn left and do it all again. And that's where life becomes difficult, because I have to try to pretend like I can rotate on the fly. Okay, so to have my first one, I'd have my second one, I drew a line to separate them, okay, and then I'd have another one, I'd turn right and I'd do it all again, which is so choppy right there as well. I've now got n equals 3, and this is getting weird and bumpy, okay. What will this look like in the end? Who knows? We could tell Java to do it many steps. But this is the basic idea you can go through to do this. Questions about this approach? Maybe you want me to reemphasize it and or teach you a different approach instead? Yes?
You also talk about
the rules of code, sure. Okay? Let's make ourselves a rule. So let's say a line turns into, oh, I don't know, how about a lightning bolt? Okay. Let's take our rule being a line turn an arrow turns into an arrow, a little stick, and another arrow. Okay, where the little stick in between does not have an arrowhead. It's sort of like the black trunk of our tree. It's just a line. Okay, here's the rule. If that's the rule, all I need to do in my recursive code is I need to think about the two possibilities of that rule. Okay, I've got the base case and the recursive case. So, I would take my code, I would say, what's the base case? The base case is just to draw a line. Great, I'll just draw a line. What is the recursive case? The recursive case looks like it's first turning a little bit to the right. I don't know how much that's turning to right. Let's say it's turning about 25 degrees. Presumably that would be given if you were shown the picture, you'd be told what the angles are, okay? So turn right about 25 degrees, and then I've got another arrow, which is a recursive call, fractal, tn minus 1. Okay? A smaller arrow, closer to the base case, a recursive call. I've then got a left turn, what would that be, 90 plus 25? Straighten out and then turn a full degree to the right, so that'd be 115 or something, but all right, it's 90 plus 25. And then I've got a forward. I've just got a stick. Okay? I'll pick some arbitrary length for that stick. It probably doesn't matter. But it does look kind of shorter than the other one, so let me make it shorter than my base case. I then need to turn right. And I think I need to turn right the same way I just turned left. Okay? So that now instead of facing to the left, I'm facing slightly right of upward. I'm going to make another recursive call. And then the last step is always to straighten out. Okay? So I just take my picture and I write down each how I would draw the next step, one step at a time, where arrows are recursive calls and things that aren't arrows or just whatever the turtle needs to do to get that onto the screen. Yes? Correct. I did not draw an arrow. I would have drawn that black in my picture. Like we did back, let's see, is this the right one? Yeah. Right, so that's like this trunk. It's not a recursive call, it's just some line you draw. Anything else people want me to say about recursive trees and turtles' drawings? Yes?
Will we ever do any something with
For fractals, you can always write it as m minus 1 because that'll move you to the base case. Sometimes you can also do it with divisions, which will move you towards them as well. But you're all, it's always safe to do an m minus 1 approach. It may be the wrong size, but it'll be the right shape. Okay, I've got just a few minutes to talk about buckets. So let's go look at buckets. Buckets would be... Is this the right one? Yes, buckets. Okay. So let's remind ourselves how buckets works. You want to have a public static string buckets method that takes the first half and the last half of the input, puts brackets around the results. Okay? So we want to chop the input in half, bucket each half, and then put brackets around the whole thing. So, let's do that. Let's make ourselves a class... buckets example. I'll give it a main method so I can test it out. And my goal of this class is to write the buckets method. Okay? And the description of buckets was right here. Yikes, that was really long. All right. So here's what I'm trying to do. Bucket the first and last half of the input and add brackets around the result. Round half down, the first half of the string with three characters in it has one character in it, and the second half of the string, second half has two characters in it. So, what is recursive in this description? Well, I see that I've defined how to bucket in terms of bucketing. Okay? Here is a recursive description of what it needs to do. Bucket the first and last half. So what do I need to do? I need to, let's just try to sketch out what I need to have happen. I need to get the first half. I need to recursively bucket it. I need to get the second half. I need to recursively bucket it. I need to put the bucketed halves together inside of square brackets. Okay? Questions about how I got that sort of high-level idea out of this description? Okay, so this is interesting. This is unlike the other two that assignment because it actually tells you what it's defined recursively, where the others were not defined recursively. This one is. The buckets is defined in terms of buckets. So now I need to get the first half. So that means I need to get the middle index, which will be the string's length divided by 2. And divide by 2 rounds down, which is what they said we ought to do for the middle. Okay? The first half, then, would be the string's substring from 0 to the middle. Because that's what substring is for. It's for getting part of a string, given some indices. Okay? So that'll give me the first half of the string. Then I'm going to bucket it. Okay? So I bucket my first half. Then I need to do the same thing for the second half. Okay. So I use the other half of this for the substring. And then I do the bucketing of the second half. I need to put the bucket halves together. So I'm just going to add them, first half plus second half. And then I need to return them inside of square brackets. So square bracket plus the join thing plus a square bracket. Questions about this? This is missing one of the three essential parts of a recursive method. What is it missing? Base case. What's the base case? One letter? Okay, we could do one letter. Let's do one letter. If the string's length equals 1, then what do I want to do? I can just put the brackets around it. Okay. And there's buckets. I'm out of time, so I won't show you working, but it does work. I will see you all a week from tomorrow.